Meeting is yours, April.
Thank you. Thank you, Peter. Tonight I am going to be speaking about Sama Vanyama, right efforts, and I'm happy to be here and sharing with you what I've discovered, as Peter always likes to say, what my research has discovered. So I want to begin with just going over the Four Noble Truths, just to set the stage for the Eightfold Path, but it's going to be very brief. And it came to me today. I had heard a podcast with Robert Thurman. He's a Tibetan scholar, Tibetan Buddhist scholar, and some of you may know who he is. He's kind of famous, and his daughter's very famous, Uma Thurman. But he's super engaging and fun to listen to, and I highly recommend his podcasts and teachings. But he wrote a book called Wisdom is Bliss: Four Friendly Fun Facts That Can Change Your Life. And the four friendly fun facts are the Four Noble Truths. So I love this because, of course, it kind of sounds like what we're all used to with, five ways to, better happiness. So his four fun facts, four friendly fun facts. First fact, stress and confusion exists. Thought I'd let you know as a friend. It exists in the world, and there's a diag that's a diagnosis, so we can deal with it. Second fact, there's a reason that this stress and confusion exists, and it's craving and clinging. Third fun fact, we know how to stop it. And fourth fact, the way to do that is the Eightfold Path. So I just love how Robert Thurman frames it as friendly and to bring us into the sense that it will bring a release to our suffering, and that we don't have to focus so much on, life is suffering. So with that in mind, the Eightfold Path is what we're talking about. I've covered recently the Sila portion of the path. So I did a full talk on right speech, then right action, and then right livelihood. And so now we're in right effort, which is the sixth factor of the path. And this starts the mental discipline or samadhi concentration part of the path. So this is where the rubber meets the road. Right effort is basically how we're channeling our energy. It's essential to progressing on the path and to all the different factors on the path, and as we'll see, into many of the other lists that we will touch upon. It has a quality of persistence, which is one of the five faculties that I'll review in a little while. And also, virya is another Pali word that's part of the seven factors of awakening. So we can think of right effort as having that energy, that virya that we need to develop the factors of awakening. And again, it's really a very direct experience with reality. It's where our practice is, not conceptual. It's the actual effort, the actual embodied effort that we're applying, and the feedback that we're receiving, and the adjustments that we make, literally, and how we're directing our attention, directing our energy, both intimately and deeply within our practice, and also in the efforts in our lives in the external world. So I listened to Peter's talk from a few years ago, reviewing right effort, and I really enjoyed how he began that talk with the different religions, but how meditation and prayer is something that shows up in other wisdom traditions. But in one of the major gifts from the Buddha was this very systematic training of the mind and this process of meditation. And here we are firmly in that advanced part of the path, beginning with the right effort, and then we'll go into right mindfulness and then right concentration. So, as we're kind of reinforcing through our scientific knowledge, but evolutionarily, we are still animals and organisms and mammals, and we have biological drives and instincts. But yet, this little window opened up, this ability for us to channel our attention and have some choice in how we're doing that. And so this is, sort of a gift of evolution, this amazing thing that has occurred to give us a little bit of choice and agency in how our experience unfolds, how we're co-creating reality. But also, again, this gift that the Buddha gave to us through these very in-depth teachings and this manual of how to cultivate and train our mind and how we are directing our attention. And the Dhammapada, we have often, Joseph Goldstein says this very often, that's why I have it memorized. The mind is the forerunner of all things. So another thing I want to mention is when we say mind, we have citta is the word that is often used, and it's mind and heart. So we are speaking of our mental qualities, but also our heart qualities, and many things that we've discussed in other talks, like the Brahma Viharas, compassion, gratitude, non-ill will. So here we are with this gift that the Buddha gave us, this Eightfold Path, and this systematic training of our mind and our attention. And I will do a full talk on right mindfulness in the new year, where we will get into deeply into all of this and the four foundations of mindfulness. And then I'll have a talk all about right concentration. But for now, right effort is also showing up in our foundational instructions for the practice. So in the Satipatthana Sutta, we will hear this mantra over and over again, this refrain: ardent, clearly knowing, and mindful. And so, as we're establishing the four foundations of mindfulness, we hear these terms. And I just want to read just a little short excerpt here, going through the different establishments of the foundations of mindfulness. This is from the sutta: remaining focused on the body in and of itself, ardent, alert, and mindful, putting aside greed and distress with reference to the world. So that's mindfulness of breath and body. Remaining focused on feelings, vedana, in and of themselves, ardent, alert, putting aside greed and distress with reference to the world. Remaining focused on the mind in and of itself, ardent, alert, and mindful, putting aside greed and distress with reference to the world. Remaining focused on mental qualities in and of themselves, ardent, alert, and mindful, putting aside greed and distress with reference to the world. So we see this repeating over and over again: ardent, alert, and mindful. And one of the ways that right effort expresses itself is this kind of, the word ardent and the ardency is like this joyful effort, this feeling of a caring diligence, a caring effort. I just love this word, ardent. I'm glad that is the English word that it's been translated into. And to further define right effort, I'm going to read from another sutta. And one thing I want to mention here is that there's the word desire. And I think, although in general, of course, we are renouncing desires and renouncing worldly pleasures, that in this case, there is some skillful desire in generating the energy of right effort. So here from the sutta: and what, monks, is right effort? There is the case where a monk generates desire, endeavors, activates persistence, upholds and exerts his intent for the sake of the non-arising of evil, unskillful qualities that have not yet arisen. So that's one, preventing the arising of unskillful states. Two, he generates desire, endeavors, activates persistence, upholds and exerts his intent for the sake of the abandoning of evil, unskillful qualities that have arisen. So this is two, abandoning. Three,
Tomorrow.
he generates desire, endeavors, activates persistence, upholds and exerts his intent for the sake of the arising of skillful qualities that have not yet arisen. So cultivating the arising of these skillful qualities. And four, he generates desire, endeavors, activates persistence, upholds and exerts his intent for the maintenance of non-confusion, increase, plenitude, development, and culmination of skillful qualities that have arisen. This, monks, is called right effort. So we can see here, and this is also referred to as the four exertions, the four right exertions, that we are preventing unskillful states from arising. We are abandoning the ones that do arise. We are cultivating and planting the seeds for skillful mind states to arise. And we are also maintaining them. And in Peter's talk, he also mentioned a metaphor that comes up in the suttas, which is this, in the garden, and that we have this water is like our life energy flowing through our attention, flowing through the garden hose. So we're channeling our energy of attention. And in this case, we want to starve the weeds and we want to water the flowers, water the seeds that will bloom into the wholesome states. And this is a commonly used metaphor as well. And I think it's a really easy one to remember and very vivid, since pretty much everybody anywhere in the world can relate to this idea of not giving nourishment to the weeds and to giving nourishment to the plants and the flowers and the things that we want to grow. Another aspect here is, the kind of redirection process. So a lot of times it seems almost counterintuitive, but we're told all the time with mindfulness, to be with what is arising, to recognize what's happening, the unskillful states, and to accept it and to allow it and sit with it, and even, embrace it. Like Thich Nhat Hanh will talk about holding your anger like a baby. And when I think about this part here, is that we're not putting energy into stamping out the weeds and going crazy with it. We're gently shifting. We're shifting that flow of attention and that water to where we want things to grow. And so instead of using resistance, which often reinforces the unskillful state, where we're using this redirection. But we're not denying reality and we're not pushing away reality. We're allowing it to be, and then we're skillfully using our right effort and all of the factors that we're training in. We are shifting and directing that attention toward the wholesome. Okay, so now, right effort and right mindfulness go hand in hand. They work together. They're like teammates. Even though right mindfulness is going to be our next factor on the path, right effort is feeding into our mindfulness, and right mindfulness is feeding back into right effort. So there's this dynamic process happening, this kind of active listening, active response, where we're really paying attention, we're putting the right effort in, and then mindfulness is showing us what the results are and what's going on in our mind, in our body, or in our breath, in our meditation, in our sitting. And then it's feeding back, and then we can continue to adjust our effort. And this is a whole art in and of itself, which I am going to demonstrate in just a moment. So we need right effort for right mindfulness, and we need right mindfulness to feed back into right effort. To kind of conclude this initial grounding of the talk and the Eightfold Path, when we look back on the first parts of the path, right view. So right view is really setting the stage for, understanding the Four Noble Truths and understanding and being truthful about reality. And then also, when we went through the Sila section, for instance, we did some active work in the world to reduce the noise of harm. So right speech, right action, right livelihood, because when we participate in harm or harm others, it tends to upset the mind, upset the body, which is going to have an effect on our concentration and our samadhi. So we dealt with that in the Sila portion of the path, which often does already a lot for people to settle their mind and prepare themselves for deeper concentration. And then here we are with right effort. So now we are setting ourselves up for this deeper part of the path, which will bring us to what I am calling in this moment the song, our own like song of waking up, our own the artfulness of waking up. And that brings me to my next section. So I am going to share a fun story. It came to me while I was preparing for this talk, and I couldn't help but bring it into the talk. So you have to bear with me with this. I might sing a tiny bit. So I just moved into this new apartment a couple of months ago, and where I'm living now. And there are many, many older people that live here. It's a building on the water, and it's been a blessing to be here. And I was in the parking lot the other day, and one of my neighbors, who's in her 80s, who apparently loves to sing and sings in choir, and is just always has a joyful mood about her, and very authentically so, just always brings a smile to my face. So I saw her, and it was a little rainy that day, and fall is here. And she started singing, "Though April showers may come your way, they bring the flowers that bloom in May." It's an old song. I actually don't know the melody, sorry, but I just had a big smile, and it was just such a wonderful moment together. And then it reminded me of growing up and watching musicals, and just in general, like the experience of watching musicals. And I grew up in choir and grew up singing all those things. And I thought, wow, this is kind of, it's goofy, maybe, but it's kind of a way that right effort plays itself out, possibly in the real world. So I thought of the Sound of Music. I don't know how many of you are very familiar with that classic, but you might at least know the song that I'm going to reference, which is My Favorite Things. So I thought about this scene when Maria, she's a governess, it's in Austria, I think like in the 40s, and she's caring for these children who lost their mother. It's a stormy night, and she's in bed, with the high-necked nightgown, and everything is, very nice in this musical. It's very well filmed, this movie. And the kids come in, they're scared. It's storming, and they come in and they gather around her, and she's very welcoming and warm, and she lets them all come in, and they all gather around her and on the bed. And basically they say, "What do when you're afraid?" And she said, "Well, I like to remember my favorite things." And so of course this is setting up the stage for moving from a fear-based state into a more joyful state, and using gratitude, well known in our tradition. And I thought it was really lovely. So then, I'm not going to sing it really, but you might know the words: raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things. Sorry, didn't land so well, but thank you. So I just thought it and fun to share because, wow, right? This is right effort in action, and channeling energy and the children, and guiding them to this other state of mind and helping them deal with fear. Now, of course, she was skillful. It wasn't, they didn't have to evacuate, right? She wasn't denying reality. She knew that they were safe. I also loved that, and I didn't, it wasn't intentional. I didn't think of this to connect it with it, but I had already selected the Vitsona Sutta, which is where the Buddha actually brings in music as a metaphor. So now I want to pivot there, and let me just see where I am with my notes. Okay, so in the Vitsona Sutta, now this is a classic sutta often referenced in right effort talks, and you will see why. So Venerable Sona came from a wealthy family and took the robes. So I'm paraphrasing the first part, and then I'll read you the direct some direct lines. So he was doing a lot of walking meditation, and his feet were really blistered and bleeding. He was a mess, and he feels he's getting nowhere and wants to give up. The Buddha becomes aware of his lament, and then arrives in one of those kind of, psychic power kind of ways. And he had heard Venerable Sona say this: "Of the blessed one's disciples who have aroused their persistence, I am one, but my mind is not released from the effluence. What if I were to disavow the training, return to the lower life, enjoy wealth, and make merit?" The Buddha says, "Now, what do you think, Sona? Before, when you were a house dweller, were you skilled at playing the lute?" "Yes, Lord." "And what do you think? When the strings of your lute were too taut, was your lute in tune and playable?" "No, Lord." "And what do you think? When the strings of your lute were too loose, was your lute in tune and playable?" "No, Lord." "And what do you think? When the strings of your lute were neither too taut nor too loose, but tuned to be right on pitch, was your lute in tune and playable?" "Yes, Lord." "In the same way, Sona, over-aroused persistence leads to restlessness. Overly slack persistence leads to laziness. Thus, you should determine the right pitch for your persistence, attune the pitch of the five faculties, and there pick up your theme." The five faculties are conviction, persistence, mindfulness, concentration, and discernment. So after that, Venerable Sona determined the right pitch for his persistence, attuned the pitch of the five faculties, and there picked up his theme. Dwelling alone, secluded, heedful, ardent, and resolute, thus Venerable Sona became another one of the Arhants. So here we see a very direct musical metaphor for helping us understand right effort: too tight, too loose, just right, and also bringing in the other five faculties. Effort, right effort would be the persistence of the five faculties, and then Venerable Sona skillfully began to tune the other ones in line with that right effort. So that is the Sona Sutta, and then I wanted to take this opportunity to mention something that we do talk about a lot here. And Peter likes to talk about the craft of meditation practice. And many of us have hobbies where we make things. Many of us can relate to really wanting to be good at something and practicing it and having a vision of what you want it to be. For me, I make quilts, and in the past I played music. Peter made jewelry. So we can really look at the art of meditation as developing a craft. And when I think about, so again, with the music metaphor, there's a lot that goes into playing a song on a well-tuned lute, for instance. And even in that moment in the sound of music, by the time we get to that perfect place where Maria is choosing the song, singing it, bringing the children on this, this transformation of mind state. But what went into that? In reality, there were many hours, years perhaps, of practice. Somebody had the idea for the song at one point and then made it into a beautiful song, carefully worded. And there really are, when you read the lyrics, it's quite stunning, some of the lyrics. But so a lot went into that. And by the time we get to the scene, it's a feeling of effortless effort. It feels like it's just naturally unfolding and naturally happening, and it's beautiful, and it's right in so many ways. And in our practice, it could be the same thing, So although we might have experiences of an effortless effort throughout and glimpses of that kind of experience, we also can look forward to, as we work on the craft and the art of our meditation and all of the different things that we're developing here, that we will begin to experience the fruits of that more as an effortless effort. That down the line, when we get to the point where we're on our raft and we're rowing across and we get to the other side being where we find our freedom and we're fully living and fully alive but free, we can let go of the raft and then it's all effortless, right? So that there is a process to get there, and that process includes right effort is a key part of that process and why it's so important. So I wanted to mention that. And then moving in now to kind of warming us up for the right mindfulness and the right concentration talks later, but still speaking about right effort now, I wanted to mention with mindfulness. So a lot of times we're really focused on the first part of it, like being in the present moment, remembering to be here, remembering to be mindful, and noticing our experience, returning to the breath, and all that's important. A lot of times, mindfulness out in the world, it kind of stops there. It kind of just, it's like it really does that part of the acceptance and the presence and the being with our experience. But there's something more that right mindfulness needs, and that is paying attention, but also adding discernment and adding this active effort and knowing what choices to make with our attention, what actions we're going to take. So this is really essential to the complete picture of mindfulness. And discernment is a key part of the path, as we know. So I wanted to mention that because when we think about wrong effort, I have absolutely experienced wrong effort in this way where I was being very mindful and sitting with something and felt like I was peacefully being and everything was okay. And then I realized I was actually just floating along on the river into some pretty weird places and potentially dangerous places. Or even just, I think about a rafting, little inner tube rafting trip I did once, and the water was very low, and I kept getting like stuck in these weird little crevices of the were like rocks, and I had to work really hard to get myself off the rocks and like back into the main channel of the river. So it really behooves us to have the full picture of what mindfulness really entails and to train in all aspects of it, which here we all did a 45-minute meditation to begin. So that's already a deep commitment, already putting our foot in that world that I'm speaking of, as opposed to perhaps a wrong effort of being mindful, being present, but like spacing out or not really knowing how to direct your energy, or not even working on the concentration needed to deal effectively with the hindrances. So we're going to talk maybe a little bit more about that. This is something I wanted to mention, and we will talk about much more fully in the right mindfulness talk. So as I just mentioned, the hindrances, so the right effort fuels the development of the seven factors of awakening. And this focused attention also helps us to overcome the hindrances, which are ill will, sloth and torpor, worry, doubt. And it really helps us to create balance in this portion of the path. So the seven factors of awakening are mindfulness, investigation, energy, virya, joy, piti, which is like a meditative rapture, tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. So our right effort is channeling energy to strengthen and maintain these qualities. It's a big part of arousing this joyful energy. And as I'm bringing up the music a lot, I think of even So when we think about the craftsman part of all of this, even when we're in maybe kind of a slow phase or struggle with our practice, a boring, a challenging part, a painful part, when we're thinking of it as crafting something and we have like a vision in mind where we're going, then it kind of can bring this, if not joyful, interest to it, a kind of alert, active interest to it, as opposed to, what am I doing this, and why am I wasting my time? And, the discouragement that we saw with Venerable Sona. These factors are really powerful in helping us to develop our concentration. And I also wanted to say about joy, PT. So this is joy born of the renunciation and the seclusion and this quality that arises. And in our meditative state, it's like a rapture that we feel in our body. And then that can be a little agitating sometimes, and then it settles into the next factor of tranquility. But one of the things that stands out to me, I probably have mentioned it before, is Tanisaro Bhikkhu likes to say harmless happiness. And one of the things he mentions a lot is that the kind of food for the path, the renunciation, the gift of renunciation appears as we develop the path and begin to experience this harmless happiness. For me, it came right away, really, in the Sila portion when I made changes in my life 10 years ago and did some major transformations, and I felt that peace right away of making those changes along with the practice. And so I like that this harmless happiness is food, food for the path, and right effort feeds into that. I guess I will just conclude by saying that, again, that I feel like to embrace this as a very embodied, living, breathing process where, like playing music or making art, we are responding in real time. We're taking the time to develop the right things that we need to be able to do that skillfully. And then we get to, fully enjoy it. And when we, take our raft to the other side, we're able to let go and dwell in this emptiness that we often talk about, that is also fullness, and this harmless happiness that is its own reward. So thank you so much. And now we have plenty of time for questions and reflections. And you might want to even think about if you're not sure what to ask or what to think about, like even in your 45-minute sit, where did you notice right effort? Where do you have some questions? But really, anything you want to ask or share is okay. So thank you. Oh, I will send you the links, Marty, of Robert Thurman. Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, I'll send you the links.
Well, what was the name of the podcast?
Oh, there were a few different ones.
Oh,
He
I thought he was like just had a regular one or something.
I think he does, but this particular where he talks about this book, he was interviewed a few times, and I can't remember which
Okay.
actual podcast I listened to. But I will whenever I give Peter the notes, I always put live
Okay.
in the
That's
PDF, so I'll put a couple links in there.
Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. So anybody have some reflections or questions? Yes, Leslie.
Thank you for that so much. I did a talk on right effort a year or so ago. I wish I'd just waited and let everybody listen to yours. It was quite good and quite helpful. But I have a question about, actually, you guys kind of know I've been obsessed with this notion of protocols. You can tell by the talks that I've done lately. And next week, you're going to get another protocol. But I actually see right effort as a kind of protocol, too. And what I'm wondering is, in your own experience or in the reading that you've done, especially the sutras, I'm doubting that this happens in the sutras, but I have found that having a partner to work with in these four categories of right effort is so necessary for me. mean, I find myself, I have to really try to catch myself when I'm in a spiral of negative, unbeneficial mind states.
Yeah.
I might feel the suffering or the annoyance of it, but I just haven't gotten to the point yet where I can go, oh, wait, wait, we're trying to disarm this. Now, what is it that you do to disarm this habituation? And so I just wonder if there was anything that you came across, or if you have any thoughts on the benefits of working in group, working in investigation sessions, working with partners. This group has heard me say many times, I'm very envious of all of you out there who are partnered, because I think that's one of the biggest benefits you get from having a partner in good faith, is that you really can call each other on those misguided thought patterns. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Do you feel like there's sometimes you have you're having a negative pattern and you're not aware of it, or is it more that
Yeah, I think I do. I think sometimes it takes me longer to catch. So, some I'm getting a little better. Like today, my house was what do they call it when they come? The inspector comes and look at it after you've sold your house. I want to call it investigation, but that's not the right word. But anyway, it's a pretty big deal because they spend 3 hours going through every part of your house, and I'm sitting down at the Alfond working on my talk for next week in the lobby of the Alfond while they're doing this, and I couldn't quit thinking about okay, do I have mold in my house? Do I have okay, I forgot to see if the jets work in the tub, and just my mind was just sort of reeling on all the things that could go wrong, and I would have to spend all of this money. Proliferation once again. I would have to spend all this money to fix the mold or to repair the fence, or yada yada yada. And I was there, working on a Dharma talk. I mean, how ridiculous is that?
Well, it's a, so for number one, some compassion. It's a pretty big
Thank
deal,
you.
a home inspection. Two, did you notice anything in your body, like while you're working on the Dharma talk, and waiting, like were you already kind of in a contracted state, or like how were you feeling? What was your full experience?
I was kind of wired because I'd been drinking coffee all day. But I was aware that I was wired, and that probably contributed to it, just that sort of level of being a little bit too fired up with caffeine. Is that
Yeah, and then as soon as you noticed it, what did you do? What type of right effort did you apply?
I actually just kind of talked to myself and said, this is not helpful. You have no knowledge. I kind of go through the Shyla Catherine questions that I talked about last month. Like, is this useful? Is this going to change anything? Is your fretting about this going to make any difference in the outcome? Just trying to be logical about how unbeneficial it is. And also, what I was taking to be a lovely afternoon of study and reading and writing, I was letting that loveliness of studying the Dharma be interrupted by worry about what could be going wrong in my house. So it was just kind of a shit show, really.
Well, I mean, a couple things come to mind. First, to answer your original question, I think Sangha helps, and we know that I'm training in mindfulness mentorship right now, and we have, RAIN practices and interactive practices, and I do think that it's very, very helpful to have the Sangha, the spiritual community, our teacher, other mentors. Also, I mean, you could maybe think about the expectations that you had for that time period. I know for me, like when if I were in that similar situation, I would be like doing a lot of mindful walking or pacing.
Yeah.
trying to do mindful walking, but it'd probably be pacing. Who knows? But so there could just be, maybe some compassion for yourself for what's actually realistic in such a momentous process, right? But
Yeah.
yeah, it's a good challenge for sure to see like how much equanimity you can maintain. Maybe you could have sung My Favorite Things.
Right. I wish I'd listened to this talk before that. I think you're right, though. I don't want to dominate things here, but I do think your question about what did I feel, Peter is so good at that in getting us to drop down into the body. And of course, the whole Goenka process is that's like a major part of that particular form of meditation. And I'm not as skilled at that as I want to be, but it's good to have you for me to hear you say that because that's not a go-to strategy that I would normally use. And I'm always grateful when somebody else is asking me that question, but I used
Yeah.
to, yeah.
Yeah, it comes from, to like for me, that is my go-to all the time, like embodied feeling of embodiment. And it really came from those years when I was, I've mentioned too many that kind of Zoom only world during the pandemic and then going out for my walks, but I would notice how fast my state would change when I would really do like returning to the breath, doing the deep belly breaths. And I think Peter's mentioned this a lot before. I think even in the last talk, perhaps, or I don't know, recently, we actually, when we have tension in our body, when he was talking about the vagus nerve, when we have tension in our body, it feeds our thoughts,
Yep.
So you have like the caffeine and maybe you had some tension already. And so the chance of those thoughts proliferating were maybe more likely to happen. Yeah. Thanks,
Thank
Leslie.
you, April.
You're welcome. So anyone else have you want to share? Anyone in the room? I'm sorry I can't see you. Steve, do you have your hand up?
Hey, thanks so much, April. In the analogy of the weeds, I've grown to no longer fear them. In fact, I don't try to just rip them out anymore and end up with just a simplified garden of only of only flowers. I think the just like in regenerative agriculture, those weeds have an importance in that garden as well. And you actually are much better off if you just are interested in them and let them do their job as well. All of those experiences all are important to us. And it's better just to observe them rather than to, just try to rip them out.
Yes, you're right. And also because even when we think about having non-ill will, if we're, if we're really upset about the weeds in the garden, that's already gonna push us into an unskillful state too.
Well, what is a weed other than a plant that we don't want?
Yeah, exactly. And some weeds are beautiful. Some weeded flowers are beautiful, but
And they have their own properties, right? So it's better just to accept them.
yes. Thank you, Steve. Anyone in the room there with Peter or anybody?
Sharon.
Okay.
You're bringing, everybody's bringing to mind several things in terms of right effort. I find that I'm often short with myself, or let me say, I want to do something a certain way, and I want to accomplish something that I think is worthy. And then when I outline what it is, I tend to have to stop myself if I don't do it a certain way and completely. So what I have to work on in right effort is accepting partial, let me say, doing something partially and looking at the positive efforts and not dwell in an area of self-criticism for not doing it perfectly, so to speak. And I'm speaking in generalities rather than getting into details. A project for me needs to be viewed rather than as a whole. I have to view it as pieces and parts. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a good example of right effort. So you're focusing on, instead of this kind of perfectionistic outcome or certain standard, you're focusing more on the process of this project and realizing that this kind of expectation you have is maybe weed, put flowering some of the unskillful state or watering some of the unskillful states like self-criticism and which is just adding noise and stress and dukkha to the process. So yeah, I think that's a great example of how to apply right effort, and that you can focus on the achievable steps in the project and what you're happy with about it, and possibly end up anyway with the kind of result you were hoping for, but your experience of it is totally different than this kind of critical approach.
That's it. You got it.
Thanks, Sharon.
Shatish.
Just to comment, what I strive for, and I'm not always successful, is to be aware of whatever is happening and be okay with it. Self-criticism or whatever it is. Important thing is to be aware of it, and be compassionate. And it's notice that it's happening, and that's it. That's what I strive for.
Okay, that's great and important, definitely. And so you notice what's happening, you're okay with what's arising, and you said you're striving for, it was hard to hear you, but compassion, you apply compassion. That is exactly a good way to start. And then I don't know if you're aware, I thought about it when Leslie was speaking too, the RAIN practice, which is a practice that was first developed by Michelle McDonald, and then Tara Brach has popularized it and adapted it as one of her teachings. So in the RAIN process, it's like a self-guided meditation, or you can do it with groups, but the RAIN stands for recognize, and the A stands for accept and allow. And the I stands for investigate, which is just like a curiosity kind of, and also a very embodied investigation. And then the N in Tara's model stands for nurture. So you're bringing in the compassion and the Brahmaviharas. So this just adds to the process that I think you were just describing, just that extra investigation, which gives maybe maybe a moment for transformation and applying this process more fully.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll have some links to that practice in case you're interested. But is there anything you're curious about as far as what you described and right effort? Is there something that you feel is missing, or does that process work for you?
Well, it is what it is, and the important thing is, and your acronym puts into a better perspective. You know, it gives it steps. Yeah, that's what I strive for, and
Great.
no,
Okay.
I don't have any questions right now.
Awesome.
I just hope that I continue doing so.
Yes, keeping applying that effort toward recognizing what is present and transforming it with compassion and holding yourself with that compassion.
And
Thank you.
not only with myself, I'd like to do that with other people too.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think
More, more,
it's easier way to
more.
change.
What was that?
I think that's an easier way to transform when you apply it to other people, you know.
Yes, absolutely. Going back to the Brahma Viharas and non-harm, that is the fertile ground for our own sense of inner peace and cultivating our concentration, but it's also very good for other people too. So,
Our psyche doesn't know the difference, I think. Maybe.
yeah, that's interesting. The feeling, the feeling, the quality of our consciousness. Yes, it feels much better to be kind and generous and compassionate with others, and it reflects back. That's interesting. Yeah. Okay, Marty has a question. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, listening to you guys talk about the home inspection and how stressed out Leslie got from it and the dukkha and everything. And I was like, oh, how do people handle, how does, this will be the first time I've dealt with Christmas, but like, what do you guys say when it comes to the, not everybody celebrates Christmas, but everybody in my family does. So how do you deal with that with right effort?
Well, what in particular? What are the different things that you're apprehensive about with Christmas?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying there's always a, you know, if a home inspection is gonna, you know, it would, there's always something that the food that you cook or the, you know, getting everything right or you know, making, you've thought, you've dotted your I's and crossed your T's to make sure everybody's gonna be comfortable and enjoy themselves. And, you know, I mean, there's just a lot of planning that goes into that. So I think in term, and you're living in the moment. So how do you do that? Like when, if you have a big project that you're working on, that's long, you know, that's gonna happen, you have to be able to have right effort in the moment, right? I don't know. I'm just thinking like, okay, right effort. How do you apply right effort to making plans for Christmas holidays and all that kind of stuff? I don't know.
No, it's a great question. It's a great question. I think it starts with that intentionality and bringing it in as much as you can throughout the process. So building in micro resets and returning to your breath. I mean, there's so many ways that we could approach this particular thing, because it could be a whole combination of, do you have to set some boundaries, you know, but I think, or where can you actually enjoy the process as opposed to feeling like you have to do certain things? So there's so many different dynamics that happen with holidays, but I would say, just first to start with grounding yourself and putting the effort into grounding yourself and thinking this through a little bit, you know, checking in with yourself, like what are you really committed to that you are looking forward to, and how can you plan for that? What maybe are some things that you might even have the insight to say, maybe I need to ask for help with some of these things. Maybe you might end up saying no to some things. So I think it's going to be unique for each person, because I've heard a lot of different. See, me personally, I've tuned down the holiday expectations, because I feel like the more that I've gone into my practice, the more there are certain things that I will have a holiday experience with my family, but I also have intentionally to turn the volume down on how I celebrate holidays and what the expectations are. So, but I think it's going to be to each their own. So maybe just starting with knowing yourself and checking in and applying effort toward, throughout this process and staying in alignment, with what are your values for the holiday? What are your, what are your commitments that you want to honor?
Okay. All right. That's a good place to start. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Maybe put the Sound of Music on in the background
Yes, holiday music is cheerful.
for the kids so they'll sit and watch it.
Dance
Yeah.
and sing through all the
Yeah,
preparation.
I'm worried about the kids going feral.
John has a comment.
Okay.
I just want to reiterate that I think that's what breath is for. The out breath and the in breath is really focus on that instead of getting carried away in a thought, because a thought can dominate in a blink, and it'll take you away. A holiday thought, a gift, what will somebody think, an opinion.
Right.
Point is, thank God for the breath. And that's what I think Buddha's gift was. To teach us the concentration to carry that tool with you, whether you're driving a car, whether you're giving a lecture, talking on the phone, you can always focus on an in-breath and an out-breath, but it's deceptive. The mind will jump in and grab you. So that's it.
Yes, you're, but John, you're absolutely right. That is definitely the medicine, the taking the conscious breath and staying embodied and not letting the mind get carried away, as you were saying, with like all the extra thoughts about, who will be happy, who won't be happy, and all the different things. Yeah, absolutely. And we are always taking that, we have that available to us at all times. So.
Thank you.
Let me make a few comments. No, go to Steve. Go ahead, Steve.
Hi, Steve.
Hey, I just want to say thanks for the talk, April. Also, I thought you were done with music. I was surprised to hear you sing. And I hope the weather for those that have favored it this week has helped usher in some of these some goodnesses here. I happen to be in the objectively probably the most busy month of my life. If one thing kind of tasked me out for a month, I've got four just by whatever universal mathematics that's come to be. So I appreciate the comments from Leslie and Sharon, and especially what Sharon's mentioned that you have to that you want things to land just in a specific way, and you have to make compromises, and I have idealistic tendencies interesting to work with and override, and require a lot of right effort, including joining this. It seems almost counterintuitive sometimes when things are super crazy to join a sangha. If you're thinking about time and I am grateful that I did join today, and that might be a little sliver of right effort in terms of cultivation, and just to sort of loosen up, and it always works that way. Whenever I come to Sangha, it always works that way. So.
Yeah, awesome. And it's good to see you. And I always tell my corporate women that mindfulness will save you time down the road. I mean, we waste far more much more time spinning right in our heads. And so
Yeah.
yeah, I think hopefully this will pay some dividends for you even in this very busy week.
It always does. I just have to remember the simple fact. I mean, Katie, who's on the call, asked me yesterday if I was joining. Is like, well, man, things are crazy. I might have to skip this week. I'm glad she planted that seed, because it you always it always makes sense to
Well,
take the time.
thank you for your perfectly tuned right effort.
Yeah,
And Peter?
just to kind of talk a little bit about what was I was thinking when you were talking, that you talked about the interconnection between the different elements of the Eightfold Path. Excuse me, I have to sneeze, I think. Maybe not. And what came to mind is the intersection between right action and right effort. That action, it basically means that the manifestation of energy, either mental energy or physical energy, both. And the characteristic of energy is that it just flows. So right effort is a kind of regulator or a gatekeeper in terms of that flow. And as we get more well trained in terms of acknowledging the experience of flow in the experience in the body, like as you were talking, I feel this energy in my body. And the mind wants to skip around, skip around, skip around, but I keep bringing you back to the energy in the body, sort of like what John was talking about. And then the action is manifested in a way that's more aware and more relaxed and more responsive to what you're saying. And in the context of decision making, in terms of, you talk about right livelihood, but I like to term it as right lifestyle. And the issue of what to do with the holidays. My solution is I go on retreats every year. That it's an informed choice. I mean, that this time of year is a time for introspection and reflection, the changing of the seasons and so forth. But in terms of lifestyle, the more I cultivate my mindfulness practice and my ability to channel the energy, the easier it is to determine what is really valuable for me during this time. You know, to what extent is it valuable to interact with people? And if so, what kind of interaction? And so forth and so on. So there's a sort of a decision tree as I go through my choices, what to do. And that's been building for decades in my life. The lifestyle I live now is something I started cultivating decades ago. And I built it around mindfulness and right effort and right action, along with the other elements of the Eightfold Path. I just wanted to put that in there because the correlation between the energy of action and the regulatory capacity of right effort is really important. And I made that connection when you were talking. Thank you.
Yeah, it is. There's so many things I had a lot more that I could have done with the talk, but I ended up hiding those pages away. I have so many like highlighted things, but one of them was talking about how much of our society is like a runaway train with wrong effort, and energy is strong and channeled by a lot of people in our culture in a certain way. So, those conscious choices of how to direct our energy and effort being the regulator. And I hear
What's
you on the,
valuable? What's really valuable?
what's really valuable, exactly. And I think not too far in the future, I will also be using the Christmas holidays for a retreat. I've been able to escape a couple of things this holiday, but getting closer to emancipation. All right. Well, thank you, everyone. And I know Peter will close us out. Thank you. I'm so happy that you're all here. So thanks so much.
Yeah,
Thank
thank
you.
you very much.
So, as is our custom, let's sit together in silence momentarily. Thank you for your practice. I wish you well and hope that we're all reasonably safe and happy till we have a chance to hear what Leslie is discovering through her studies and practice. Be safe, folks.